There's a culture war going on in this country. We can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and this is The Reconnect, where we're putting God in His place, back where He belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So how do we do that on days like this? How do we be the people who cultivate not only the mind of Christ in the matters of the day, but how do we speak the mind of Christ in a way that not only honors Jesus, but penetrates the conversations that are happening in our culture? I don't know about you. I get up every morning. I think to myself, well, I wonder if there's going to be anything to talk about today on the radio. And then I realize I probably have 3 or 4 hours of material to talk with you about today. But I do want to hear from you. If you've got something to say about something that we're talking about today, I want to always remind you that the phone line is open. It's 877-655-6755. I particularly want to hear from you today. If you are a college student and you happen to have a professor who is leading you and your class to protest during class time, the inauguration of the incoming president, the president-elect Donald Trump, or if you are a woman and your woman card has been stripped from you by the women in Washington who intend to march but don't want any women who don't want abortion marching with them, love to hear from you as well. So again, the number here is 877-655-6755. Folks, it is Inauguration Week. That's what we should be talking about. We should be talking about the peaceful transition of power. We should be talking about the Constitution. We could even be talking about the legacy of the outgoing president or the plans of the incoming president. But oh no, no, no. Instead, we will be talking about protests, planned violence, college professors using the classroom time to teach, organize, and resist the incoming president's agenda. And we will be talking about controversies that the president-elect makes for himself by choosing to tweet and say things to foreign reporters that are simply unwise. Friends, it seems that wisdom is in short supply, particularly in the wee hours of the morning. There are times to tweet and there are times not to tweet. It is written so in Ecclesiastes. Okay, it doesn't quite say that, but you get my point. All right, so where should we start? Well, I'm going to start here with the fact that dozens of college professors across the country, well, college professors on dozens of college campuses, that's probably a better way of saying that, across the country are going to be using their classroom time this week, starting tomorrow on the 18th, to teach, organize, and resist, that's the name of the movement, Trump, actually Trumpism, to be more accurate. So you can read all about this, actually, at several places on the web. I got this from the Campus Reform website. I think they might have been the first to report on it. They tend to keep their finger on the pulse of what's happening on our nation's campuses, particularly higher education campuses. And so this movement, they tell us, is known as the Teach, Organize, and Resist movement. It kicks off tomorrow. And the goal is to challenge what is described herein as Trumpism. So here's what college professors are being asked to do. Transform, this is a quote, transform your classrooms and your commons. Those would be the spaces where students gather together. Spaces of education that protest policies of violence, disenfranchisement, segregation, and isolationism. Now, I got to tell you, all those things are bad. So if those things are going on, we should be protesting them. But none of those things is happening. All right? They're urging educators to use this as an opportunity to affirm the role of critical thinking and academic knowledge in challenging Trumpism. Well, I got to tell you, they might be better off actually educating the next generation of people to think critically and to think for themselves and to think about what they're thinking about instead of lapping up ideologies that frankly are at this point projections of people's expectations, not actual reality. And it actually says that they want to protest proposed things. They want to protest things that are threatened particularly the rollback, you're going to love this, of the hard-won rights that form the fragile scaffolding of American democracy. Here's a newsflash. The scaffolding of American democracy is not fragile. I mean, there is some fragility to the concept of the American idea, but the scaffolding of our system is actually not fragile. I mean, the reason that we can have a peaceful transfer of power every 4 years or every 8 years sometimes is precisely because the scaffolding, the foundations upon which this nation was built, which by the way, the Christian principles, are not fragile at all. They are, in fact, quite solid. This is an anchor to which you can secure your hope. Okay, now much of this, much of what they are calling these teachers to teach about and organize against is in relationship to racism. In fact, the language of white supremacy appears throughout this call. The concern is the state violence targeting people of color. I'm reading quotes from their website. And so what they're concerned about here is the institutionalization of ideologies of separation and subordination, including white supremacy, misogyny, homophobia, Islamophobia, and virulent nationalism. Now, if they would just take the time to pay attention to what's actually going to happen on Friday, we're going to have a peaceful transfer of power from the first African-American black president of the United States of America through the swearing in by Clarence Thomas, who happens to be an African-American justice sitting on the Supreme Court of the United States. He's going to be the one who is swearing in the next president of the United States and the next vice president of the United States. So anybody who thinks that somehow in some way this is a transition away from the realization of what we just celebrated yesterday, which was the civil rights achievements of men like Martin Luther King Jr. and those who marched with him in Selma and those who went to prison with him and those who sat with him in a Birmingham jail, they're just wrong. So from a Christian worldview, we got to be people of truth, and we have to lift up the truth. And we're not going to set our hair on fire about things that haven't happened. Every time someone in the incoming administration uses the word may or might or perhaps or we're talking about or it has been proposed, that is not a deal made. That is one negotiating idea among a swirling dervish of many others. So until something is actually done, I don't think we should consider it done. All right, what else have I got here for you? Oh, some of you are thinking, hey, I want to know what schools are on the list. Where is this happening? What are the campuses that are involved? The list is too long for me to read on the air, but you can go actually to Campus Reform and pull this down, or you can go to the Teach, Resist, Organize website. Where all of the information about all of these institutions of higher learning and the things that are going to be happening there. And there are some, there are some schools on here that don't even sound like schools. I'll just admit to you that that is true. But then there are schools that you've heard of, like Princeton and like Vanderbilt and the University of California in many of its campuses and Scripps and Texas State and the University of Pennsylvania and the University of Kentucky and the University of Southern California and the University of Washington. But I will admit to you, there are also some schools on here that don't sound real. So there you go. A couple of dozen places across the country where we know from this website it will be happening, but my guess is it will be happening in other places as well. Now, these professors aren't the only, sort of the robed crowd that lines up in academic opposition to all kinds of things over time. They aren't the only ones. There's actually now several dozen lawmakers, sitting members of Congress, who form another list of people who are boycotting the inauguration of the incoming president. Donald Trump's inauguration is going to be boycotted by, I say boycotted, they're simply not showing up. I actually have no idea if in the past I've never wondered in the past whether or not my congressman or my senator was going to the inauguration. It never even occurred to me to ask because I just assumed that everybody went. And it doesn't even matter which party you're from. This is about the observance of the peaceful transfer of power. This is about our democracy. So in my view, this is one of those everyone must attend kind of events. But everyone is not attending, and they are doing so for what they view as really good reasons. And you can see the list of legislators who have confirmed that they will not be in attendance. There's lots of places where this is listed online. So actually, if you just wanted to Google, is my congressman attending the inauguration, that's a pretty easy way to find it. Here's the deal. If you scan down the list of people who are not going, let me see. They all happen to be members of the same party, and it happens to be the party that lost. So because they are the party that's not celebrating the victory, they are not showing up. So I want you to roll back 8 years ago, and I want you to imagine if the Republicans who lost the White House 8 years ago had failed to show up. For racial reasons, by the way, because that's exactly what's happening here. So it's not because Donald Trump is white, but it is because they are not, that most of these members of Congress are not going to his inauguration. So our partisanship has now become intensified by our internal racism. And I don't know which one is worse, but it actually feels like our partisanship right now is a more acute problem even than our failure to be racially reconciled in this country. So as a Christian living in the United States of America today, folks, we have got so much work to do. And it better be work that starts on our knees, but it also better be work that we are doing in relationship with one another across party lines and across lines of division in our communities that in many cases happen to be racial divisions. So I'm going to encourage you to actually make an effort. I mean, host an inauguration party maybe on Friday. Invite people of a really wide diversity of opinion and background and life experience, and invite them together. And simply because you're Americans, and the observance of what's going to happen on Friday is important. It's important for us to observe that it's happening, even if we don't agree with the viewpoints or even the character of the character who is going to inhabit the White House for the next 4 years. So the concept of a peaceful transition of power is something that here in the United States of America, you're going to hear that phrase over and over and over and over again this week, the peaceful transfer of power. That's what will be celebrated by the mainstream media. However, there are a whole lot of folks out there who intend for it to not be a peaceful transfer of power. And so this video has emerged exposing these anti-Trump groups who are actually plotting criminal acts to disrupt the inauguration. They are they're plotting to do things, including throwing acid from a big building onto the crowds who gather for the inauguration, which, by the way, I feel fairly confident our guys in blue and our guys in black and our guys wearing green and camouflage and all other manner of civil defense will thwart every such effort. But the very fact that there are Americans plotting to disrupt the inauguration through violence is evidence of the fact that the fabric of our country is wearing pretty thin. So we're not just talking now about uncivil conversations. We're not just talking about name calling. We're not even just talking about political disagreement. We're actually talking about the prospect of violence. One American against another over who's in the White House. Let me just remind you that 8 years ago, there were not riots when Barack Obama won the presidency. Republicans did not riot. Republicans didn't even march on Washington, which will be the next subject here, because I got a fight to pick today. I'm not much of a fight picker. I'm a pot stirrer sometimes, but I'm not really a fight picker. But I got to tell you, There is a fight to be picked here, and it's with the Mean Girls. I don't know if you are familiar with the Mean Girls, but the Mean Girls, man, they have now shown their teeth. It is not pretty. So the Mean Girls are putting on a march. They're going to march on Washington on Saturday. So the inauguration is happening Friday, and the Women's March on Washington is scheduled for Saturday. And the reason that I call them Mean Girls is because they're about the most hypocritical feminist fundamentalist you're ever going to find. And you say to yourself, that is some name calling there. I might need to hear that again. They are the most hypocritical feminist fundamentalist that you're ever going to find. They are the Mean Girls. Why do I say that? Because they're trying to take away the woman card of every woman in America who's not pro-abortion. So, you know, as a woman, I got to tell you, you can't have my woman card. You come, you try to get it, but you're not going to say to me, you know what, you're not a woman, because you don't believe that abortion should be the highest priority of every woman in America. Of course abortion shouldn't be the highest priority of every woman in America. What are you thinking? And for those of you who say, you know, The pro-life women were just foolish to even think that they would be marching in this women's march. Because after all, they should have paid attention to the fact that Planned Parenthood is sponsoring the Women's March on Washington. And to that I say, you hypocrites. You're speaking out of both sides of your mouth. You spend all of your time yammering before us that Planned Parenthood is about health care for all women. It's not just about abortion. Well, now we're calling your bluff. Because for you to now say that Planned Parenthood's March on Washington can only be the only people who can participate are people who advocate, not just think that women should have the right to choose, but who actively advocate for abortion in America, for the death of the next generation of Americans. Those are the only people that are welcome. And Planned Parenthood is the group that's putting it on. And they are uninviting. I don't know if you've ever been disinvited to anything. I have. I don't think that's a shock, because you're like, who would want you at a party? Like, we've never met you, but we hear you on the radio. We don't think we want you at our party. So I've been disinvited to a few things. I've been uninvited. Like, after word got out at, you know, amongst the peeps that, you know, I was coming to talk, and, you know, they Googled me and they're like, no, no, we don't want her to come talk. Okay, so if you care that you have the opportunity to speak your piece, and then you're uninvited to something, you don't get the opportunity to speak your piece. And so these women who, you know, they bought their bus tickets and they're going to go to Washington, D.C., and they're going to participate in the march because they believe as women in women's advocacy issues. They just don't happen to believe in abortion as one of those issues. Maybe they believe in equal pay. Maybe they believe in that there should be an opportunity for working women to get time off when they have a baby. Oh, no, no, no babies. No people who want to have babies. No, we want abortions. That's what this is about. So all the women who are going to be marching in Washington on Saturday, I want those of you who are going to seek coverage of this event, I want you to be horrified, universally horrified, that the passion of these American women is the death of the next generation. That's what they are so motivated by, that they're going to march on Washington. The following Saturday, people who want to march for life are going to be in Washington. So if you don't yet have your plans on when to march, and you are a person who believes in the sanctity of life, I want you to really be thinking seriously about finding a way to get to Washington, D.C. for the March for Life. It's the week after the March for Death. Oh, I'm sorry, the Women's March on Washington, but not women who believe in life. So the Anti-Life Women's March on Washington will be this coming Saturday, the 21st of January. 1 week later will be the March for Life. And so I just want to encourage you, and I want you to just think for a moment about all of the women who have made advances for women in America and women around the world who would be unwelcome at this particular Women's March on Washington this coming Saturday. The first woman to run for president of the United States, her name was Victoria Woodhull. She wouldn't be welcome because she was pro-life. Susan B. Anthony, the leader of the women's suffrage movement, which, hey, Amanda, isn't that the right to vote? Yeah. So the woman who led the effort for women to even get to vote wouldn't be welcome at the Women's March on Washington. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who was a leading figure of the early women's rights movement, would not be welcome this Saturday because they're stripping these women of their women card. You cannot be a feminist, they say, if you are not pro-abortion, and not just pro-abortion, but an advocate of abortion. That's what they're marching for. Sarah Norton, who fought to allow women admittance into Cornell University, wouldn't be welcome. Elizabeth Blackwell, the first woman to earn a medical degree, wouldn't be welcome. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. I think that one of the things that we as Christians need to be advocating for is not just the sanctity of life, but the sanctity of what it means to be a woman. Because it is not my femaleness is not defined by whether or not I advocate for the death of others. My femaleness is reflected, it's the way in which God made me in his image. I don't understand that. But that's what it means to be a woman. It means to be a person bearing the image of God into the world. And I don't do that by myself, because male and female, he made us in his image. But there is something unique and precious about being a woman, and I think that's what it means to be a feminist, to celebrate the fact that women are who we are, no better, no worse, sometimes for better or for worse, but not always. Nothing better or worse about being a single woman than being a married woman or a working woman versus an unworking woman or a woman who has the privilege of being a biological mother and one who doesn't. Women are precious because women are created in the image of God. And you really can't be a feminist without being feminine. And so these efforts out there to strip women of their femininity and to strip the notion of being a woman, somehow to separate that, to bifurcate that from the beauty of birth and the beauty of being a mom to the next generation, whether a biological mom or a mom because God gives you kids through the wombs of others. I just want to be reclaiming some of this ground. And so you can't have my woman card. And if the mean girls who are marching on Washington this coming Saturday want to come get my woman card, bring it. Just bring it. All right, so it is inauguration week. It's what we're going to be talking about a lot this week. But hey, we love to have your feedback, so I want to tell you a way that you can give us some feedback. So I really do. I value hearing from you. And not everybody can call in, and I totally understand that. But if you go visit our website, which is reconnectwithcarmen.com, and follow the links, you're going to not only help us understand who you are and what you want to know more about, but how the show is helping you. If you've got ideas for the show, something you would like to learn more about, this is your chance to let us know. So what do you want to know? What kinds of resources would be helpful for you as you try to bring God back into the conversations of the day? What do you think are the challenges that are keeping Christians on the sidelines? What topics do you want us to cover? Go to reconnectwithcarmen.com and let me know. Hey, right after the break, we're going to be talking Evangelicals for Life. This is Carmen on The Reconnect. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Reconnect with your host, Carmen LaBerge. Now, back to Carmen.
Hey friends, this is Carmen LaBerge, and you're listening to The Reconnect, where we're putting God in His place, back where He belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So we are talking today about what people are talking about, and sometimes we're talking about what people need to be talking about, or stuff that's coming up soon that people will be talking about, and that we want you to be equipped to talk with others about in the conversations of the day. So connect with us online. The website is reconnectwithcarmen.com. I was supposed to tell you in my earlier comments that what we're conducting on the website is a survey. So it's not like you're going to go there and have to figure out a way to tell me what you're thinking. There's a survey right there that you're going to click on, and you're going to let us know what you're thinking using that super simple survey. All right, so here with me now is a good friend of our ministry and somebody whose ministry I greatly appreciate, and her name is Kelly Rosati. She's the Vice President of Community Outreach at Focus on the Family. She serves as the ministry spokesperson on child advocacy issues. She oversees their adoption and orphan care initiatives, the Sanctity of Life Department, Option Ultrasound, and their community care efforts. So Kelly Rosati is just a whole lot of fun to follow on Twitter if you don't already. She is at Kelly M. Rosati. Kelly, welcome back to The Reconnect.
Well, thanks. It's great to be with you. I'm still in awe that you could say super simple survey without stumbling over that. I didn't think I could do that.
Okay, so alliteration is actually, you know, a fun game to play. So there you go. Okay. I'm one of those people who feels like, okay, people should be able to pick any word of the alphabet and rattle off three words. So let's just say, you know, it's adoption and the alphabet and orangutans would be an O. Give me another A word. Apples.
Apple.
And okay, and then I would look at my kids and say, what does God have to say about each of those things? And Matthew will invariably pick apple. Like, he's always going to look for something that comes out of Adam and Eve's story, because that's the one he, like, really knows cold. He knows that story. So he's always, he will use that story no matter what reference point you give him. But it would be fun to, you know, have them in your family, right? Your kids would be able to take the word adoption and talk about God.
I think so.
Yeah. So alliteration, right? So alliteration is just a fun exercise in our family. So
cool.
Super simple survey. That's not hard for me.
That's a piece of cake for you.
That's a piece of cake. All right. So it's so fun to have you on. Tell us about the Evangelicals for Life event.
Well, we're really excited. This will be the second year that we have had this event, and it's in conjunction with the March for Life, which you and many of your listeners probably know is the largest pro-life event in the world, where literally approximately 500,000 people gather in Washington, D.C. in the freezing cold, typically, just to bear witness to the dignity and sanctity of every human life, and to say that no matter what happens by way of policy, by way of administrations, by way of politics, we will never stop speaking out for the dignity of every life, born and preborn. And so the march has been such an important event. And as Jim Daly and Dr. Russell Moore of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission were kind of looking at the future of the pro-life movement, one of the things they said was, we really want to do a better job as evangelicals of connecting and anchoring to this largest pro-life event in the world, the March for Life. And so that's why we decided to start the conference. And the idea of it's really simple. We want to cover a range of sanctity of human life topics, inspire people, equip them, encourage them, and send them back to their communities and families and churches to be able to be a voice for the sanctity of life.
So you mentioned Jim Daly from Focus on the Family, and you mentioned Russell Moore from the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. Who are some of the other speakers?
We just have an amazing lineup. Matt Chandler is going to be with us this year. We are going to have Dr. Sam Rodriguez from the NHCLC. We're going to have John Stone Street from the Colson Center. We're going to have Eugene Cho, Glenn Packiam, Jenny Huang. We're going to have so many great speakers. We're going to have a speaker named Amy Ford, who works on a ministry to serve women who find themselves in unplanned pregnancies within churches. We're going to have Jennifer Marshall from the Heritage Foundation. So just lots of terrific voices and leaders who are going to cover a variety of topics, everything from pregnancy center work, reaching out to preborn children and their moms, to sex trafficking, to end-of-life care issues, to special needs issues, to adoption and orphan care, and just a whole range of dignity of human life issues.
Wow. Kelly, it sounds like the Evangelicals for Life event, which is in Washington, D.C., on January 26th and 27th. Do I have those dates right?
Yeah, 26th through the 28th. Yep, exactly.
Oh, okay. And the march is on the 28th. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So it sounds like there's kind of something for everybody. If this is not something that is, you know, just for pastors or something that's just for women. This is something that's for men and women and for Christians who want to know about more about the range of issues related to the dignity of human beings and how we can support life issues, not just life issues related to the preborn. Because I think some of the criticisms of evangelicals that we all hear in the world is that, hey, we care about those babies until they're here. But what I heard last year at the Evangelicals for Life event that was, I think, particularly impactful to me was the incredible level of concern across the evangelical front for issues related to all of life. So like pro-life for all of life, adoption and foster care were highlighted, but also issues related to the aged and issues related to human trafficking. Those are some of the ones that stand out for me from last year's, as well as, you know, some very, very powerful testimonies of folks who have abortion as a part of their experience and what that means to them. So it just, I had an incredible experience last year. And so it sounds to me like this year's event is really designed for a very broad audience.
I think that's absolutely right and encourages me to hear you describe last year's event that way because that's exactly what we were going for. That's not something that has been typical, I think, of the movement necessarily or has characterized it. And I think for those of us in it, we wanted to really listen and hear and be able to express, I think, what was always there, which was a passion for the dignity of all human life, as you said, born and preborn, but really do it in a way that was more explicit and equipped people to know how to express it more fully and more concretely in the settings where they live and breathe and work and do their daily life. That's their families and their churches and their communities. And so that's what we wanted to do. For those who might be listening thinking, well, that's really nice, but I'm not going to Washington, D.C. In the middle of January, the really neat thing about this is that you can log on and watch the whole event from your own computer or iPad or iPhone at evangelicals.life. So we will have a simulcast so that folks from all around the country can participate. We did this last year, and we had thousands and thousands of folks from all over the country, really all over the world, that were logged in and joining us as we went through this conference.
And absolutely the only reason I won't be sitting there with you for those 3 days is that I have a book deadline on the 1st of February, and I just thought it was unreasonable to think I was going to be done, right? But I will be watching via the simulcast on evangelicals.life, or as you pronounce it, evangelicals.life. Yours sounds so much better than mine. And so, folks, you can, it doesn't matter where you are, you can participate and sit at the feet of these extraordinary teachers. And it's at evangelicals.life. And the event is January 26th to the 28th. It's in Washington, D.C. There actually is still time to register and to go if you can be in the D.C. area next week. So if you're just now tuning in, we are joined today by Kelly Rosati. She's the Vice President of Community Outreach at Focus on the Family. And we are talking about this second annual event, Evangelicals for Life, and it is done in cooperation not just between Focus on the Family and the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, but a whole range of other ministries. It's really exciting to see the list of ministry partners this year and the wide range of people who will be speaking. So, Kelly, why do you think this kind of conference is important? Why do we need this?
Well, I think one of the reasons we need it is just to encourage one another. It can be very lonely and feel discouraging as a pro-life person in our country where we have had so much abortion since Roe versus Wade. And where it seems like the discussion in so many quarters is just settled for people and they've moved on. And for those of us who really do dream about a day where every life is protected and is valued both in and out of the womb, sometimes it can get discouraging. And I have to tell you, the first time I ever went to the March for Life and looked around and saw so many people, hundreds of thousands of people, and so many young people, it was such an encouragement to me. Not that we wouldn't continue to do what we do if we were the only ones. That's what we would need to do. It's just encouraging, though, to realize that we're not alone and that we do have hope and that there is value in being a witness to light and to life for these babies and their moms and for life in all other stages. And so I really encourage people just from a motivation standpoint. It's incredible. And then for the Evangelicals for Life conference, it's such an equipping. I think for many people, they just weren't aware or aren't aware of lots of the other issues. They might not be aware that there are kids in their own community in foster care who are modern-day orphans and they need families. They might not be aware that the adoptive family in their church might really be struggling because they're raising kids that have a trauma background and they could really use some help. They might not be aware of the opportunities to minister to sex trafficking victims, whether that's in their own community or on the other side of an ocean somewhere. And they just might not realize that there are these opportunities as a family, for example, to go into nursing homes in your community and adopt an elderly neighbor who may be very lonely and never have much human contact, that all of these things are expressions of the dignity and the value of life and part of what God has for us to do as Christians and in our families and individually in our communities. And so I think for all those reasons, it's a great set of events to participate in.
Oh, Kelly, thank you so much for joining us today on the Reconnect. Thank you for filling us in and what's happening with Evangelicals for Life. Folks, you can get all the information at evangelicals.life. And Kelly, thank you again for all that you're doing with Focus on the Family, and in particular in relationship to, I know that option ultrasound is something that is just so cool and so important to you. And so just want to celebrate that. And thank you again so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, folks, I would love to be hearing from you. And so we have a, as Kelly noted, super simple survey posted at reconnectwithcarmen.com. And we're going to invite you to go there and let us know that you're listening. Let us know who you are. We value your feedback. I want to get to know you. I want to get to know who's listening and what you're interested in, what you like about what we're doing, what you don't like about what we're doing, what you wish we were doing, things you think we miss. Things you think we talk about too much. What are the challenges that are keeping you or others on the sidelines of the cultural conversations of the day? What do you need to be better equipped to talk about? So I had the opportunity last week to be in Tampa. And I was actually there because it's a comfortable place for me because it's where I grew up. So I know my way around, and I know the places where I like to go get a sandwich and all those things. And I was trying to write this book. So I appreciate your hospitality of Birga Alden, who was here hosting on my behalf. I think she did a great job. But one of the things that I had the opportunity to do was to lead a Bible study for some women in Tampa who I have known my whole life. They're basically women who helped raise me, and they're still meeting together in a Bible study. And so I had to be with them on Wednesday. And one of the things that I did after covering what, you know, the Lord put on my heart to cover is I just opened the floor for questions. And I got to tell you, I mean, that's the interaction that I love. I love the sort of popcorn nature of the, hey, this is something that I need help with. This is a conversation I'm trying to have with the kid in the back seat. This is, this is a question that was raised that I don't know how to answer. I know the answer. I know the biblical answer, maybe, but I don't know how to frame that in a way that's both going to honor Jesus and be compassionate to the person with whom I'm having to have or seeking to have this conversation. So that's what I want to hear from you. I want to know, what are the kinds of things we could be helping you with that would actually get you off of the sidelines of the conversation and equip you to be the ambassador that you are called to be in the conversations of the day. So that's really my hope. That's really what I would love to be doing here. And in the ways that we are effectively doing that, we would love to hear how that's working. And in the ways that we need to supplement what we're doing with some other things, we'd love to know what you think those are. So again, the survey is at reconnectwithcarmen.com. We'd love you to go there and share your thoughts. Okay, it's at this point in the show where we go below the fold. We lift up stories that are designed to help you start or engage with others in conversations that on the surface may not appear to be about God. But if you could lift this story up in a conversation, then it gives you the opportunity to move from this subject really easily into a conversation that centers on eternal things, gets people thinking about what they're thinking about and thinking about eternal principles. So this could easily be a story about your neighbor who buried a saint in their front yard to help them sell their house, but it's not. This is about a woman in Brazil who has been praying for a number of years to what she thought was Saint Anthony, but which in fact was a figurine from the Lord of the Rings. So there you go. I know. Amanda just said, oh my goodness. Okay. So yes, in fact, here's the headline. Brazilian woman prays to Lord of the Rings elf for years, mistaking it for a saint. I know, you're saying to yourself, now, and you're saying, this is fake news, Carmen made this up. No, no, I mean, CBS News went and tracked it down and actually verified the story that had been posted in the Brazilian news service and verified this story. So they actually have pictures of the figurine. So this is the real deal here. Okay, so here's basically what happened. This woman was given a gift a number of years ago. She thought it was a Saint Anthony little figurine. She's been praying to it. She's been praying to it for all kinds of things. And come to find out, she had this little multi-generational event at her home over Christmas. And her great-granddaughter, right, her great-granddaughter started playing with this little, what I will call, idol. And brought it out to the table. And then the next generation up person said, thinking to themselves, that looks suspiciously like Elrond from Lord of the Rings. Hey, let's Google that. I don't think St. Anthony has long hair. Sure enough, St. Anthony is never depicted with long hair. And sure enough, when they, quote, Googled the logo on the bottom of the figurine, they found out the truth, says the article. Quote, the moment I found out was one of the funniest moments in my entire life, and we laughed about it for days. In the end, the mistaken identity was, in fact, not this Saint Anthony, but Elrond of Rivendell. And so here's how the article ends, and then I will get to the Christian point of all this. She says, so, Donna Neely now has a proper Saint Anthony figurine with which she can pray for miracles, lost causes, and matchmaking, no doubt the way she intended all along. As J.R.R. Tolkien characters go, however, Lord Elrond of Rivendell isn't such a bad one to have mistakenly worshipped all those years. A Lord of the Rings figurine could certainly get a lot worse. Here is what your Christian worldview insertion into this conversation looks like. Idolatry is idolatry is idolatry. And it doesn't matter if the figurine that you're praying to is a figurine from the Lord of the Rings, or if it is a character from actual history who is known to some as Saint Anthony. This is the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, and so I felt like it was a good time to remind us why we don't pray to saints, why we don't pray to figurines at all, why we don't embrace idols. So the idolatry issue is pretty clear. Like, we are not to set anything up above God. We're certainly not supposed to have an affection for any character or creature set above God, right? We're supposed to love the Lord our God in a way that is supreme above our love and affection for anything else. And we worship God and Him alone. And so even the whole concept that she would be worshiping a saint is a problem. I think that the problem is actually compounded by the fact that she's worshiping not just the idea of a saint or the memory of a saint, but she's actually worshiping a figurine representing a saint. And in this case, a figurine representing something that's not even the saint that she thought she was worshiping. So the line in the article, if you wanted to just lift one up and say to yourself, wow, there's something to that. Here's the sentence. I Googled the logo on the bottom of the figurine, and I found out the truth. Where are you getting the truth about what you're worshiping? Are you getting the truth about what you're worshiping by Googling the logo on the bottom of the stuff sitting around in your house? Because that's not where the truth is found, my friends. Google is sufficient, but Google is not omniscient. So the only omniscient one is God. And one of the problems with the worship of saints is that worshiping a saint suggests that saints, who are in fact just dead people, are omniscient, that they're all-seeing and all-knowing. And they're not. They're certainly not omnipotent. And they actually have no ongoing influence in the things of the earth. They're dead. They're dead. And they're either with God or they're not with God, and I'm not here to judge that. But I can tell you, they have no ongoing influence in the things of the earth. How do I know that? Because there is only one mediator, and his name is Jesus Christ. And there is only one counselor, and that counselor is the Holy Spirit of the living God, the Spirit of Christ, the third member of the Trinity. That's it, friends. It's Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. It's not a host of saints. Yes, there's a host of angels. We're not supposed to worship them either. We don't worship people. We don't worship angels. We don't worship dead people. We worship God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and Him alone. Now, it is a little troubling that Protestants have to be constantly reminded about this subject, because this is actually one of the key issues of the Protestant Reformation. There is absolutely no biblical evidence for praying to saints. You cannot find any evidence in the Bible of people praying to saints. And it is imperative that we understand that Jesus Christ is the only mediator between man and God. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 5. There's only one mediator. There is no one else you can turn to for salvation, eternally or temporally. By praying to saints, we're actually turning those people, dead people, by the way, into mediators, which they are not. They've got nothing to offer us for salvation. We need to realize that those dead saints are just as much sinners as us. They're just people. Yeah, there are people who we recognize as blessed, and in some cases, we recognize as people who performed miracles in this life. But Jesus told us to expect that of one another. Expect that we were going to be able to do things even greater than He, because we would be possessed of His Spirit, and we would be doing things in the world that actually magnified His power in the context of human history. All right, so I could probably belabor this point more than is necessary. I'll just leave you with this. If you are bowing down in your life to anything other than God, if you are seeking a mediated relationship with God through any intermediary other than Jesus Christ, you don't need a priest. You certainly need a saint. You just need Jesus. All right, friends, that's all I got for you today. I would love to hear your feedback. Go to reconnectwithcarmen.com and let me hear from you. This is a ministry. We'd love your support of it. I know I have been on a bit of a rant today. I'd love to hear your feedback on all of that, either on Facebook or Twitter, and meet you right back here tomorrow. Have a great day, and God bless.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.